broadcasters. Thanks for getting up this morning to chat with us. There's almost as many of us as there are here, but that's okay. So what we're going to do this morning is I've got a few questions we'll ask to kind of get some balls rolling, and we'll open up to you guys for questions, thoughts, ideas. Our goal will be to end up early enough to allow you to be able to get lunch and get to the board game auctions, which are family game auctions at 12 and the Euro game auction at 1. So we'll shoot to end by 11:30, sort of when things wind down, when you're all tired. The thing is, though, you know, many of us put together hour-long, two-hour-long, three-hour-long shows. So a few protocol items to keep things flowing. Try to keep your comments to, you know, a minute or so. So don't ramble too much. And if you don't have any, if there's a question, don't feel that we all have to answer the question in order. So if you don't have something to contribute to the question, it's okay. You don't have to answer anything. So I think we're going to start with introductions, because those of you that have, I was joking ahead of time, what we actually should have done is put up a black sheet so all you would hear are voices, because that would actually work better for you, and you'd see me trying to do a video thing. And then we'd have like a little matching game. You'd have like headshots you try to, and now reveal, and you got to figure out which voices came from which people. But, so, we'll go ahead and do some introductions, and when you introduce yourself, tell us what your podcast or show is, and what your format is, how often you do it, things like that, who it's for, your intended audience, and sort of what you try to do, what's your goal. I'll give you an example. I do Board Games with Scott. It's a video series. It comes out every month now. my frequency has changed as life has gotten in the way, but I shoot to cover one board game per show. It's for people that have not played that game and are interested in learning it or want to buy it. And the audience are mainly new folks, people haven't seen it before. So that's what I do.
And I'm David Coulson.
I'm Stephen Conway.
And we're from The Spiel. And our show is just primarily about every game that you could possibly ever come across, whether it was 100 years ago or yesterday. Yeah. And we try and, on each show, I think we try and cover a fair share of new stuff and old stuff on each one and kind of show everybody how...
Introduce people to the wider world of, of games. Sort of our little tagline is that a show about games and the people who love them, and that kind of encapsulates it probably as good as anything.
Right, exactly.
And we're audio only at this point.
Bi-weekly.
Probably video in the next year or so. And bi-weekly.
Except for in 2 weeks, which we won't have an episode.
Yeah. All right.
That's it.
I'm Jim Van Verth. I do the Vintage Gamer podcast. From the name, you might guess that I cover older games, cover board games, card games, a little bit of RPGs and computer games as well. What?
Can't talk about that.
Oh, right, I can't talk about that. But I can't talk about that. I also do a segment for a show called Winging It, called Games Worth Getting, where I play a character called Rufus. And in the past, I've talked about games that you can play while drunk.
But
the show featured a lot of drinking. But now they're changing their format, so I'm not just going to talk about games that are fun in large groups of people.
All right, I'm Tom Vassell.
And I'm Sam Healy.
And we're the Dice Tower variety show about games, mostly. I try to... a contributor-based show where we have a lot of contributors about games. We talk about a lot of games. We copy The Spiel, their format. And our audience is the world. Domination. Mostly, I like to think that we're for new gamers, but we're probably not.
No, we aren't. People tell us that all the time.
I know.
So, that's all.
Mark Haberman.
I'm Jay Little.
And we're from The Metagamers, and we're basically a podcast by geeks for geeks, and we're coming from across the country via Skype and basically talking about games that we're currently playing. And our shows will have a main segment every show, so we're split up between talking about one game in particular or talking about a topic such as like auctions or...
a particular designer, a specific game. I think our target audience tends to be more of the dedicated designer or Euro-type gamer. We often go into a lot more depth. We usually have a pretty cursory or light overview of several games, and we try to really tackle in-depth one game, whether it's offering strategy, whether it's taking a closer look at the design and the mechanics of it. If it's a particular designer, trying to take a look at their oeuvre and kind of evaluate some of their different designs. But I think we really go into a lot of depth on a few topics rather than try to cover everything, because we know that the three of us couldn't do that. Jim Cody couldn't join us, but he's the third member of our podcast.
And then my other hat is an audio podcast called Onboard Games, which I'm there with Don Dennis and Eric Dewey, neither of whom are here. And it is a bi-weekly show. We all have some industry insight. So like the Metagamers, we tend to take a topic and talk about it, but we also try to bring in, when possible, sort of some industry views on things, because we've all had various experiences. And that's at onboardgames.net. It's a fairly new one. Okay, why don't we have a few questions to kind of kick some things off, and then we'll open up to questions from the audience. Now, the general process of putting together a podcast, for those of you that don't know, is first you plan something. Well, in theory, you plan something. Or you sit down and grab a microphone and say, hey, let's record a podcast. Cool. Then you actually record the thing. You then edit. Such a small four-letter word, edit. This edit thing, what is it talking about? You edit it up, you upload it onto some sort of server, and then you announce that it's up there, and then the listeners can get it through iTunes or something like that. What I wanted to open up to the panel, talk a little bit about that process, a little bit about specific areas in the process that maybe you do differently than others do, things that you've come up with a neat solution for, things that you'd like to share with folks about the actual process of turning it from your voice into something they're listening to.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Well,
anyone?
Nobody else will jump in.
Yeah. I was going to say, well, you put it well. It's almost like doing any other product, that you have a design, you have a production, packaging, marketing, and a lot of it is time management and deciding what you're going to focus on. You can focus on having a really technical show, and then maybe not have enough as much time to do marketing or do design work or things like that. So everything takes time. You know, the design, the editing, and for us, it's been difficult because we're all over the country, so we've been using Skype to talk to each other.
It's a free voice over internet downloadable software package that you can use and just hook in a headphone, headset, and you're basically talking to each other for free. I think for our format, what I've found is it's almost like an hourglass approach, where we spend the most time brainstorming concepts and ideas for what we want to talk about. We try to define them a little bit more, come up with a show agenda. Recording the show is the smoothest and easiest part. Where originally we had wanted to do something almost every week, and then we found out with the amount of time that it takes to edit, prep, especially because the way we record, and I don't know how the rest of you do, since we're recording separately, we have three different voice tracks. Mark has been doing the bulk of the editing, has to sync up, edit, splice together, and make sure it's working before we get a final bundled product, just because of the nature of how we're recording it.
And with Skype, you can record them all at the same time. Or if you record them all at the same time over the Skype, you get sort of if you've ever used Skype, it's kind of staticky and not a great quality. But if you record separately on your own machine, and then they send me the files, and I can splice them back together so that we all have a local recording, and it sounds a lot cleaner that way. Except Audacity has a nasty habit of slowing down when a screensaver comes on or something. So you merge them up, and then halfway through the podcast, they'll get out of sync, and you have to go through the whole thing, and it's a big mess.
I'd be curious from the rest of the panel if you find that editing takes up far more time either than you originally anticipated, or if it just becomes the bulk of each episode.
Yes. Editing, well, I edit before and after, because we have so many contributors, so I have to email them. As soon as we post the last show, I said, okay, this is what we're going to talk about next week. If you want to talk about it, fine. If you don't, whatever. And then they start sending me the contributions, and Moritz always waits until 3 seconds before we record. But we get these, and then I have to edit them all, because we get complaints about the levels all the time. But if I didn't edit them, the levels would be even worse. And I got to take them, make sure that we know what they're talking about, so that we're not totally surprised on the show, make sure all the levels are the same, play everything, and I spend almost more time before than I do after. But even after is a pain, and once, you know, we had to catch up to Spiel with the Enhanced podcast, that takes more time than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Either.
Especially the pictures, because you got to get pictures that you're allowed to use.
Relevant.
Pictures that fit in the screen, and then just doing the Enhanced podcast takes a lot of work. Recording it, it's no problem.
Have you used the Geek for a lot of those pictures, or?
Well, we use Fun Again because they said I could.
Oh, they can just...
With the Geek, you have to contact each person, and that's a lot of work. And especially when I decide to use a picture now, you know, then I would have to contact them 24 hours ahead of time and such. So, The manufacturer sites are a lot easier because they want you to use their pictures, unless you're saying the game stinks.
Yeah. I do a lot.
You never do that, Tommy. Right?
No, not since Joe's off the show.
I do a lot of editing up front as well, but my editing is, I hate editing audio, so I write a script. So I edit the script to make sure that it comes out smooth, and I do a little ad-libbing from the script as I go. But that way, I found that way, I don't have to edit as much audio, you know, going over the stumbles and mistakes, because I'm trying to put out a very, since it's just me, I'm trying to put out a very polished product.
So do you do like multiple takes sometimes?
I'll do multiple takes
yourself,
if I screw up. Hmm. Yeah. And then, then I do a lot of editing afterwards to get rid of all those takes.
So. We don't really do multiple takes, but we'll record it because we're sort of segment-based. We'll record each segment as a little chunk and then sort of move on. I guess without getting too sort of inside baseball, I guess I think of our process as being sort of narrative, being a writer. There's sort of beginning, middle, and an end process to it with the preparation and the outlining. And then the actual recording.
And then we throw all that out.
Yeah, and then we had a plan. And then the editing certainly takes, I would agree with Tom, with the enhanced thing taking it all. Yeah, I take the hit there. But the audio, I've found, just the more you do it, you develop kind of a process, and it's like a muscle. The more you exercise it, it's never that it gets easy, but it definitely feels more streamlined, you know, a year later into the whole deal than it was. But the enhanced thing, just trying to line up all the pictures and all the extra issues that go along with that.
Just for people that don't know, talk about what an enhanced podcast means.
It's basically like a slideshow that just goes along with the audio, and just pictures synced up with the audio. So if you have the capability with a player or a media player on your computer to watch pictures while you're listening, you can actually, the idea was, you know, because you're limited by audio, wow, wouldn't it be nice to actually see? I'm envious of the video thing where it's like, wow, it would just be so much easier if
you
just go, here it is.
Because with video, you've got all of these plus video.
Sure.
You know, because if you're watching something and you've got, if you're watching TV and the video cuts out but the audio continues, you can still watch it. But if you're watching something and the audio cuts out, it's really disturbing. So the key of doing good video is you have to do good audio first. Yeah. You do the good audio first, then you do the video later. I don't use a script. I'm just, you know, by myself, acting like an idiot in my basement. I've got a bit of a structure to the show because I'm always covering one game. But many times I'll do different... you know, I don't use a script, but many times I'll just start over. Sometimes I'll actually just start over three or four times, and that's the way I do it, is I'll pause and just snip out. So I end up recording 2 to 3 times the amount I actually use, and it takes me about an hour per minute of editing. So like a 10-minute video, it's about a 10-hour 10-hour editing pot. The DMOC video is about
50
hours. An hour long thing. But then you've got to... Then it looks like talking about the game like this.
Right.
And
right.
Part of what's with videos, they're going to see you, so you can't read from a script. You can't have a nice microphone in front of your face, mm-hmm. So you have to think about hiding a microphone. You have to worry about cats jumping into the set and knocking things over. So the video, it's fun, and it's nice to show stuff, but you're basically piling on a whole ton of editing work. But the advantage, on the other hand, is when you go to something like this, people see you and they recognize you. And so do your students that you teach as a professor, and they see you wearing a kilt and a Gutwood for Sheep shirt.
One thing I forgot to mention, another big part of my time is, since I'm doing a historical show about games, I have to do a lot of research to cover the history of the game, and especially the games that have an older version and a newer version. I have to cover both of those. So that takes up a lot of time as well, which you guys covering newer games don't have as much to do, I guess.
Yeah, because people are going to tear apart what we say with a fine-tooth comb.
I'd say we still do a fair amount of research, just because there's so many details about each game. If you're talking about the designers and their past and possible games that they're, you know, mechanically related to and stuff like that, if you don't do your homework, because obviously, like, we don't all know everything about everything.
Right.
and we come off.
I'm going to stop calling you that. Where's my underwear?
So we only sound like small idiots. We have to do quite a bit of research.
Well, because we're always talking about games we're currently playing, and we're always on the geek anyway, that our research is kind of already built in. I mean, we've already researched the games that we're getting and playing, so we're on there all the time, so we're constantly researching pretty much.
Backtracking about the Enhanced podcast, for those of you who don't know about it, the pictures are nice and good, but even if you don't have the pictures, the best part about it is chapter breaks.
You
so you can skip the part of the show that's boring or get to the part that you want to hear.
Not that you would skip any of it, but return to your favorite part.
Oh, wow. You mean I can just listen to Moritz?
Yes.
That's right. So you can just jump
straight
on.
The Moritz
Tower. We have people who just like our theme music and just get to cut out the middle. It's great.
So now we've all done a lot of episodes and developed some techniques and tricks and things. What would be the one thing that you found that's your secret, something that's been very useful to you, whether a technology, a tool, a trick, something that you've come up with that you really like, if you want to expose yourself to the world, expose your secrets?
Levelator.
Oh, tell us about that.
Levelator is a program that takes a WAV or AIFF file and we'll level out your audio. So if you have, it gets quieter in a section, it gets louder in a section.
Secret no more.
Yes.
And what was that called?
It's free.
Levelator. It's free. And you just dump it in there, and it levels it all out for you.
That's nice, actually.
And I found that very useful. I just did a couple of interviews at the Origins. at the Game Developers Conference. And there was some problem with my level being lower than the person I was interviewing. And people complained of my level being low, but that was after I ran it through Levelator. It was much worse before. So that might help you out.
I don't know. The only trick that we've done is I'm a programmer by trade, so we were getting tired of going online, and every time you post your blog for your podcast coming out, you have to go in there with the HTML format and come up with this. You know, you're usually going to have a format that you stick with. So I just wrote a little tool where I can cut and paste, you know, our header and our timelines and who was on the podcast, and it just spits out HTML, and I can throw it on the page. Because it was taking, like, a half hour just to put the thing up every time. So other than that, I don't know.
The main trick were Skype. Because of the logistic problem of us not being in the same physical location, using Skype and making sure that we all had the right headsets and audacity to do it.
Oh, and
that was the trick.
Google Documents, too. Since we're not near each other, Google Documents lets you create like a spreadsheet or a Word document online, and you can actually invite other people to be able to edit it, and it keeps revisions. So we can go on there and say, we're going to talk about this, this, and this, and we can go on there and add his things. And
so it creates online permanent documents that each of us can go in and edit, and that's been the best way for show concepts, for games we want to discuss, for ideas that we have on what to talk about or what we're going to do. That's been a great way to communicate with each other.
We have a whole spreadsheet of all our show ideas, and we all rate them on how much we want to do them and how knowledgeable we think we would be, and then kind of sort it like that and see what our best topics are to discuss.
That's cool.
I think for us it would be Eric Sommer, really. I mean, and before that, Mike Fitzgerald. You know, way back when, I didn't know how to do it, so I went and hired some professional guy to do it, who is made fun of to this day, with the top 10 list thing. You know, I told him to go over the top, and he did. But he wanted $25 per week to keep doing new stuff, and I don't. You know, we're broke, so Mike Fitzgerald offered to do it out of the blue, and then once we added that, and Eric just does anything, and everyone doesn't like everything he does. We killed Jeb, but it just adds a whole level of professionalism to the show because we have this nice opening, a nice closing. I have openings for everyone, and that takes work to put it all together. But it also gives us focus by having these clips in. And I don't know how long Eric will stay with us, but it's just been really helpful. He does a lot of stuff. Anytime I need anything, he'll spit it out for me. So.
Yeah, that one on the last episode where he had like the movie intro at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have taken a ton of time, and he's just, awesome.
That's awesome.
We have no secrets.
Not even GarageBand?
Oh, I guess, I mean, I've
found a couple good tricks with GarageBand if we're going to talk tech sort of secrets. That sort
of
seems
people
like,
here for that kind of thing.
I would highly recommend if anybody's interested in getting into podcasting that's a great, great tool to start. It's a Mac-based piece of software that's very user-friendly. The user interface is very simple and comes with a lot of stock, you know, music clips and things that you can have fun playing with. It's actually sort of fun to actually learn to use the software, and it's got some more advanced features as you kind of ramp up your level of understanding of the software. And you know, as every piece of software, it has its little idiosyncrasies that you have to learn to work around. But for anyone interested in podcasting themselves or sort of the software that we're using, that's been a great help for not really knowing what we were doing to start out with and getting up to kind of a baseline level of I would hesitate to call quality, but at least acceptable listening level that I would recommend that to anybody.
And you can use the music without worrying about copyright
or
anything like
that. Yes,
although it bugs you then when you hear someone else use, hey, that's my music.
Reminds me, you guys watched The Lot at all? They had the directors out. Did you see the one movie? It came on and had your back. It had your mute.
We had a listener write, "Dude, they totally stole your theme music." I was like, "It's thanks. I think of it as our theme music, but it's really not ours."
Yeah, that your music was on that one.
That's why we changed it.
The car salesman.
That's right.
Speaking of theme music, I get my music from a place called Magnatune.com, which does Creative Commons free music. You just have to say that it's from magnitude.com and you can use it as part of your podcast.
My biggest tip that's helped me the most is actually I have the Board Games with Scott beta testers. And thanks, guys, since the Power Grid episode 14, I've got a group of 10 people or so, and when I finish the show, I'll send it to them and say, hey, watch this and give me comments in the next 3 days or so. They'll give me lists of detailed comments with mistakes I made, things that weren't clear, and I go back and re-edit. So it does mean I get a whole second editing time. I have to really schedule in a week for that process. So I make it, and that's why, you know, you say, why does it take so long? When I started that was when I went to 2 weeks, when I added the beta tester. So I did a week for production and a week for beta testing and refix. And then, that takes a lot of time. But a part of it is how you perceive your product. I mean, for me, I perceive my product as something that could sit on the shelf, and 10 years later, you could pull it off and still use it if you can find the game. And that's sort of, it's a balance that we all make between temporal stuff that's interesting news, here's what happened last week, and more permanent stuff, whether you're making something that you see as a more permanent item. Let's open it up to questions from the audience. I have more questions, but I want to make sure that you guys have chances to ask what you'd like. Yes?
I just wanted to ask, what sort of interaction do you seek and get with your audiences? You do it for a reason. People listen. You get feedback, but
money! 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 Money!
And we've all failed miserably.
We haven't figured out that money thing.
We just said it was broke.
That's right. But then when a vendor says, why, Scott, I get 10 emails a week from viewers of your shows telling me that they bought the game because of you. Yeah. Oh, really? Anyway.
I think meeting the listeners here at Origins has been one of the really neat things for me as far as interaction is concerned. You know, really until that point, I mean, we receive emails and stuff like that, but the interaction that we've had with our listeners here and the other podcasters here, it just kind of makes it a little bit more real, a little bit more interesting to me, because I'm more of a people person. I don't necessarily... I'm not a professional. I almost feel like I should be sitting where you guys are, because especially I listen to these guys, you know, and Tom does most of the work on the show. I really just show up and try to make him look stupid, which is difficult sometimes. Sometimes it's really easy, though, but I think as far as level of interaction, I like hearing from listeners. I mean, it's one of the things I'm looking for when I check my email or when I'm looking at our guild on BGG, so... I think that's necessary.
I'm always looking for interaction. I mean, and I try to force it with the contests. You know, a lot of contests, you have to email us about something or other. Yeah. And that kind of helps me know that people are out there listening, because, you know, when you get two emails a week, you wonder, are people just downloading it and deleting it? Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it's nice to get...
makes me feel better.
You don't know. And every once in a while you'll hear from someone and they say, I've been listening to this show since episode 100, you know, since the beginning. Oh, and I never heard from them. So it's hard to have some kind of thing. And I know that the opposite is true, that we should be mentioning listeners more often in the show so they know that we're acknowledging them. And that's actually something we're going to try. I'm going to start trying to do even more. But it's a lot less than I would like. Although if I got more emails, we might be overwhelmed. But
I'd say listeners are the engine that drive our show. I can't believe the amount of improvement and suggestions that... Almost from the beginning, there was just a demand for interaction that I don't think we were prepared for in the slightest. We were like, we're just two dorks doing the show. And they're like, holy crap, people are actually listening and want this and this and this. And they're all very reasonable and good suggestions. And that just that interaction and the ability to actually improve the show based on that kind of conversation, that the show is really two-way conversation, right. Even though it's just us talking on one hand, the conversation we get back is really valuable, and I don't think we could even come close to doing as good a job as we do if it wasn't for
the
listener interaction we get.
The majority of the show, after a year now, has actually been developed through the listeners sending in feedback, so they've been able to funnel us towards what we're doing now, so hopefully...
Oh, that's what we meant.
Yeah, exactly. So doing. Everything that we screw up, they fix in the next episode. So basically, it's a product of the listeners rather than us now. When we started, it was just us, and it was terrible. But now it's really cool.
It kind of really does feel like a collaborative effort.
Yeah, exactly.
Here it comes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I agree with all of them. There's some affirmation to what you're doing. Because it's a labor of love. There's a lot of time. There's a lot of resources that you're investing in. And getting feedback from people is great. And when we decided to start a podcast, it was hard. How do we differentiate it? How do we make it something that's worth listening to, that's not just riffing off of what other people are doing? How can we find a niche? So the feedback from our first few episodes really helped us clarify our goal and the direction of what we wanted to focus on, as well as reaffirm for us that, this is going to be worth doing. There's an interest in listening to the way we approach games or the level of detail we wanted to go into. Like our Ra episode, where all we did was talk about Ra, and that was it. We were really well, we didn't know if people would want to spend an hour listening to just Ra. And then we've got more responses, more feedback, more email on that, going, wow, that was the best one. And we played it that night after listening to it, and I think that really helped us focus that. That sort of approach and that sort of focus really is valuable, that there's space for that.
And like, we'd like to have more interaction with the, you know, answering questions and things like that, but there's only so much time. I mean, we have to cut ourselves off just to keep the podcast around an hour, and, you know, adding in questions and all that just kind
of... For those of you who may not have heard our first five-minute strategy session, like 15 minutes, rambling and rambling. We wanted to just create a small little bumper between sections, and just
getting donations. We've actually only got one donation, but it's not about the money, but just the fact that somebody enjoys the show enough to actually pay for it, even though they don't have to, is really
that was
just
very rewarding.
Yeah, it's
that's unreal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm looking for swag. So, you know, anybody wants to send me a copy of Titan or a copy of
You know, the positive affirmations are really important, because it's really nice to hear from people positively, because one negative comment really can chew you up for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people don't even mean it. It always happens when a new podcast starts. So the new podcast will start, and someone will say in the thread, oh, this is great, you know, it's so much better than that boring Dice Tower, or, you know, it's so much shorter, or whatever the comment is you send, you go, oh, you know. And then, of course, there's a few people who, you know, are just pretty trashy all over certain podcasts on the net. And sometimes you dwell on that, and getting an email that says, hey, I really like the podcast, it's just great.
Yeah.
You know, I keep them all in the file, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I like to read the good every once in a while.
Say scoreboard. Look at the scoreboard.
Yeah, I've been stunned by here. It's been great when people come up and they... Well, the funny thing is, someone will see me and I'll see they're looking at me, and then something turns and they smile. They're laughing inside. They're remembering, I guess, you know, covered in blue makeup, shaking maracas at us or something. And then there's this big smile. It's a real smile. And sometimes they're scared to death. You know, it's funny. In fact, I was at Essen this year, and I was stunned at how many people came up to me at Essen, not American, that knew me. And this one couple, it was a younger, like teenagers, and the girl just shook, and all she could say was Scott. And everyone said, "Yeah, she really liked it." But now I've been recognized in local game shops, in grocery stores. You know, people are seeing me. It's like, "Hey, are you the board game guy?"
Grocery stores.
Because a clip came on about board games with Scott on Yahoo.
Okay. On Google.
Where they, and so actually I've been noticed by it. It got, you know, I've been on PBS and things like that. I don't know, this whole fandom thing. I think, like, you know, 2 years ago, Scott Nicholson, who's that? And now, Scott Nicholson, who's that? But anyway, I saw a hand.
One question, I play a war game.
Here it goes.
Here it comes. You guys ever do a podcast in your underwear? That's what I want.
Not since you left.
Do you watch the show? You can see.
My word.
I'd say we probably all are in underwear. When we're doing our show, there may be other clothes, though. But, you know.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
I'm curious, who uses a Mac, who uses an IBM, and if you guys use both, which one's easier to do this?
I use a PC. After using Audacity and looking at GarageBand, I want a Mac in the worst way. Because Audacity, several times has completely crashed and lost my file after an hour and a half of editing. It's everything it takes to get back in there and do it over again.
I would like to use the Mac for everything. I use both. GarageBand's easier for the enhanced and everything, but Audacity, which I love, on the Mac is not remotely as good as Audacity on the PC.
Well, and that's saying something.
I mean, it's just mostly because we have so many clips. So I am in a different situation than most people. Like, GarageBand just does not work as well with all the clips. Yeah. Because we want to listen to them live, and I mean, if we inserted them, it would be a lot easier. But we want to listen to it live, and so we record on the PC, and then I immediately transfer it to Mac and do all the editing there.
Audacity is an editing program?
Yes. It's a free recording program, and it's really a wonderful program.
Yeah.
And it's fairly intuitive.
It took us, I think, 15, 20 minutes playing around with it before we were able to figure out how to use it. Download it at audacity.com. You can play around with it for a little bit. Since it's free, there's no reason not to try it.
Well, the new version, there's a beta version. I don't know if you've used that, but it seems to have fixed a lot of the problems with it.
I started out on the PC, but the PC was too loud for my process. So I switched over to using MERS Mac. Merlafty, everybody. Queen of podcasting. Then when I got my own Mac, I used that. But I switch back and forth between using Audacity and GarageBand.
We record and edit using a Mac, but I do use a PC for using. I have a copy of Photoshop that's on Windows, doing the enhanced, you know, stuff like that. I'm sort of tossing things back and forth between my Mac and my PC in the, you know, process of.
But we also had problems with the set being too loud. You just switched over, and the new machine you can't even hear.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, much quieter.
And I use GarageBand to record my audio, and then record video, dump it all into Final Cut Pro on the Mac, and then manually sync that up together to get a good quality. Because many video camcorders, you hear recording noise if you use the microphone. So I record audio straight to the Mac and video, and then manually sync my voice. And that's lots of fun.
You're crazy.
Final Cut. So Final Cut, I queue up. I've gotten good at it after 42 episodes. It took me about 40 hours to do my first 10-minute episode.
Oh, I can imagine.
Because every time you cut, every time you add a new scene, things like that, you're manually nudging it till they match up. So if you ever see something off,
I think we should point out that we're never going to go to that level. You're never going to have a show if that's what happens.
So you wonder why I do one show a month. Now you're understanding.
It just looks like itself, right?
Can you not sync it up beforehand and then cut out both the audio and the video?
That's what I do now. I'll do one long recording of everything, and then that's why sometimes I'll actually start over several times and then cut out the stuff I don't want. And that saves me a lot of time in the editing process. Now, one thing I wanted to do actually before we go is I know that there are some other podcasters sitting out there in the audience. And I wanted to give people, those other podcasters, a chance to say hi, tell us who they are and what they do before we continue on with questions. So anyone out there want to claim they do something? As I look at several faces I know. Anyone?
I'll start.
All right.
I'm Tom Dowd. I'm from
Oklahoma. Oh,
you do a lot of podcasts. I'm Tom Dowd.
I've been podcasting now for
damn long.
I'm Mer Lafferty. I have several podcasts. I should be writing, and I do several for Lulu.tv.
I'm Chris Miller. I do some stuff for the House of the Harping Monkey and Potty and Book Stuck.
Ditto, but I'm not Chris Miller. I'm JJ.
Hi, I'm JJ, and this is Victor from Fistful of Comics and Games.
I'm Paul Tuttis from How Games Will Travel and Voice of the Revolution.
And as we're asking these questions, if one of you have something you want to throw in, feel free. It's chatty time.
I don't want to interrupt anybody. I'm John. This is Jay, the vicar and the kingfish from Geek Label Radio.
Oh, cool.
The Geek Label podcast.
Wow. Is anyone not a podcast? Will that be changed in the future? That's true. It's the podcast.
The Jess and the Show.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm really new to podcasting, and I thought it caught my attention. I'm a teacher and part of the teacher track. Is there a listing of your gentleman's programs and how to get to them anywhere?
Why, yes.
Can you Google it?
There's actually a podcasting booth down in the exhibit hall.
There is.
And there is a sheet with a list of all the gaming podcasts on it.
Except for mine.
And mine. We're not on that.
That's right. So
many.
This panel is being recorded.
Yes, it is.
So I would bet you on the Vintage Gamer,
yes.
When you post this, we'll put a list of all of our links to everything.
We'll all be there. Yeah.
I'm really enjoying this.
If you're on BoardGameGeek too, there is a wiki page on BoardGameGeek with all the podcasts listed on there.
And a lot of us, when a new episode is posted, we'll post an announcement on BoardGameGeek.com because there is a special podcast and blog forum to alert people that a new episode is available. And then from any of those websites where the episodes are available, you can access the previous episodes. You can subscribe via RSS. Feeds to be able to download new content when it's made available too.
And somebody is posting, I don't know who it is. Posting an article, a form article.
Because of the content.
All the podcasts and reviewing. Not reviewing, but saying this is what they're talking about in this episode. That's really good.
He'll do a summary every month of here's what people are.
It's called a board game podcast report, I think, if you search for that.
Thank you.
To find the booth, I don't think it's marked very well, but try to type Flying Buffalo.
Okay.
So just find Flying Buffalo and explore and try to decide.
Thank you.
So I had a question just everybody, other than other board game podcasts, what other podcasts are you all listening to right now?
I listen to Twit. This Week in Tech, I keep up with that, and DL.TV. I was very sad when Tech TV went the way it did.
Yes.
And so happy to hear Patrick and Leo are still around. I like all the NPR podcasts because it's a way of getting NPR content fairly easily.
Is Patrick and Leo on the web at all, or you
If you search Twit TV, they do a weekly talk show with John C. Dvorak. And it's a fun talk show. That's right. But those are some of the ones I listen to regularly.
Same. I would suggest This American Life in the NPR vein. That's an excellent anthology. They pick a theme and then they have sort of radio stories around that theme. Just really interesting. Has nothing to do with games whatsoever, but just really interesting podcast. And This Week in Media is a really good podcast if you're interested in sort of a insider's look at media production as well as being a consumer of media. It's just really, it's very inside baseball, but just really interesting podcast that I listen to, as well as Twit and PLTV.
Yeah, I also listen to a lot of the NPR stuff. I listen to a lot of science podcasts. So there's 60 Second Science, and there's another Scientific American podcast. And I listen to a lot of stuff on patiobooks.com, where you can find this, which is just to come out with the third version, which is Earth. Yes. Got to promote.
I don't listen to podcasts. I find them boring usually. I listen to most of the board game ones, and that takes up my time. I occasionally just pull other podcasts up, but I almost always listen to them just to see how they do it and what tips can help me at mine. But I like listening to music a lot, so I usually do that instead of podcasts.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I have I got three kids, so I don't have a lot of time to listen to stuff. But, I mean, Tom will say, hey, you need to go listen to this or you need to go listen to that, and I'll take that under advisement and go check it out. And that's just piecemeal. I'll just do that every once in a while. But most of the time, my free time is trying to be spent with my wife and my kids. But, you know, it doesn't allow for a lot of private time.
It's pretty much all I listen to now, and I, you know, to and from work every day. So I've listened to every episode of The Spiel and The Dice Tower. Slice of Sci-Fi, although since they got rid of Evo, it's not, I don't know, it's quite as good. Geek Label, Have Games Will Travel, it's awesome. Almost all of them. I mean, there's too many to mention. But
the only other thing I listen to besides the board game podcast are I download old-time 50s radio shows.
Oh, yeah, I do. That's it.
That's fine.
I'll listen to, X-1, and Suspense, and Box 13, and The Black Museum, and it cycles between a board game podcast and one of those old classic shows. That's about it.
Oh, and Grammar Girl. Grammar Girl's awesome.
Never McGee and Molly, maybe.
Yeah, there you go. For Stephen and David, congratulations on 1 year.
Oh, thanks.
And since you guys have forums as part of your podcast, I was wondering how much more time does that add to the process? And I also wanted to know, you now have a sponsor, which is great, and how did that come about? Did you shop yourselves out and say, hey, we've got a big enough audience, or did they find you, or what?
I think that was a surprising thing, because we didn't shop it out. Time Well Spent actually came to us. Yeah. Several months ago, and we were shocked. We were very pleased, and we kind of spent a couple months, you know, hashing over how we thought we could help each other out.
Well, I think the backstory, if you remember, the Time Well Spent people contacted us. You were talking about the retailers coming to you. They actually said, you know, we noticed that when your episodes come out and you actually talk about a game, that the sales for that game suddenly jump up, and we'd like to actually reciprocate, which I was like, That's pretty damn cool. Okay.
The funny thing was, it was a very obscure game we had reviewed in one episode. It was a Wig Out.
Wig Out, yeah.
Wig Out.
Then it jumped to number two on their like sales for like a holy cow. The Spiel effect.
We got to pick more obscure games.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who's going to notice Rye at
And as for the forums, I think it's taken a little bit less of the time, because we spend so much time answering emails with the same questions, that by giving a forum and allowing people to interact with each other and answer some of the questions, that it actually ends up being kind of a safety valve for all, you know, I love the interaction, as I already said, but you do kind of feel inundated with, you know, wanting to respond to everybody, and having that sort of public place to respond en masse to everybody makes it easier in a way to deal with that interaction than having to. I mean, I still like to send individual emails too, but
we switched to forums primarily because we were getting so many great emails and we didn't have time to share them with everybody. And the listeners were a hell of a lot more funny than we were. So by letting them post on the forums, they can get all that cool content without us just regurgitating it on the show. So it's pretty cool.
In your experience, let's say I'm thinking about starting a podcast, what sort of financial commitment should I expect to be making? Assuming I have a PC.
I think bare bones for the first year, you could get away with probably about $70 per year.
If you wanted to do kind of a strip down, I'd say the best investment, since Audacity and all these other tools are free, is get the best quality headset mic combo that you can get to be able to filter out as much noise as you can, one that's comfortable because you're going to be wearing it a lot. For some of it, you're recording up to 2 hours maybe, so get one that's going to be comfortable and really good. The one that I have is a USB one, so I can plug it into my laptop, plug it into my main one. It cost me $50. It was like the best $50 I spent for that. It was well worth it.
I guess I didn't include that. You know, I spent $20 for mine.
A URL to get a domain and hosting, whether it's through Libsyn or WordPress or some other place that either has a blog or somewhere for you to upload media content. If you register a domain name, that could be anywhere from $30 to $50 over the course of a year for hosting and things like that. So it can be very, very moderate up to maybe...
It depends on how much you're going to put
through. You could suck in tons of it, especially if you're going to do anything like the multimedia-wise that you don't have access to free software for or things like that. But you can get away pretty, from our experience, maybe you'll find that to be true.
I recommend you become a co-host. No problem.
It's interesting that it's based on how much you upload, so how much content you put out. It doesn't matter how many people are downloading. You know, whether it's 50 or 5,000, you're still going to pay the same. It's how often you want to podcast and how much you want to put up there. So $5 a month for, you could probably do 2 shows a month for $5 a month.
Now, I use the Internet Archive for my hosting, and it's free.
Oh,
but the disadvantage of Internet Archive is you have to give the stuff away. So it's on the Internet Archive, but that's where all my video stuff is hosted on the Internet Archive, so I get no bandwidth charges from any of that video. It's slow. It's not as fast as it would be if I put it on a local server, but it doesn't cost you anything. The big piece of advice I'd say is invest as little as possible until you know you actually want to stick with this. Because it's a regular time commitment that you have to do. And you might want to go out and buy a mixer board and a great mic and all this stuff, and then you find out 3 episodes later you just don't have the time for it. So start small.
The barrier to entry isn't cost so much as creativity and the organization and the time you're going to put into it, from my perspective.
And with the mixer board thing, I was going to say, you're generally putting this out as a low-quality MP3, so it doesn't really matter how good your input is when you're compressing it like that output. Every time I hear a podcast, it's just bought new equipment. It always seems to sound worse than when it did a microphone. So
you're not operating.
Yeah.
That was our experience.
As long as you can keep it away from your mouth and not yell into it, you're fine.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah.
When we started podcasting, we had a pretty good personal account. We each had a web host and everything. And then Penny Arcade linked to my podcast.
Uh-oh.
So it was at the end of the month, and we had like 98% of our bandwidth that month.
Yes.
Yeah, scared the hell out of
me. It's exciting.
You have your own web host, and you think you can do it? Don't. Get someone with free bandwidth. Get a host with unlimited bandwidth, because you never know what's going to happen.
And even if you have somebody else host your files, you can still have your own website linking to them, so they handle the bandwidth of downloading the files.
Right.
Yep.
What is Penny Arcade?
It's a very, very popular computer game, webcomic. Extremely popular. Hundreds of thousands.
I don't know why.
They actually apologize when they link to people because they know they crash their
stuff. Wow.
It's like the Fark effect.
Upper Deck to see if they were going to do the World of Warcraft card game, and the most of that time our downloads were maybe about 150, something like that. And one day we went from 150 to about 6,000. And our page views went up like, I don't know, astronomical, things like that. And we had just moved to Google Bluehost, and that's been really great for us. It's $100 for a year, but it's like 2 terabytes of upload and download, and it's just phenomenal. So if you have a little bit of money spent, I think it's like worth it.
Now, did your subscription rate stay up after that, or did it mostly drop back down to what it was before?
I really hate talking about numbers.
Okay.
So here's a question for the panel. We've all been doing this for a while, and I'm sure we've all made fairly significant mistakes at some point that never quite made it out to the air, people didn't know about. So now is the time to embarrass yourself in front of everyone and share some of your big blunders. What did you do that you wish you hadn't done that people might be able to learn from?
I'm sorry. Mine's really quick and it's really stupid. So, you should probably keep some of your comments to yourself. As far as my own experience, when I likened Lost Cities to Raccoon, I took a lot of flack. I believe that, and I'm sticking by it. But you know, I have a lot of people that disagree with me. So, but you know, I mean, sometimes your opinion doesn't necessarily need to be heard, but I think that's one thing that I really messed up on. I should have kept my mouth shut.
No, I think a lot of people enjoy that. They like the.
Yeah.
I think they like it when you guys are different and kind of you know getting arguments and stuff. But I enjoy it at least, even though I don't agree with you. I mean, Lost Cities is one of my tens, but you know, I still enjoy hearing you guys talk about it. Yeah.
I think we leave most of ours in. Putting your foot in your mouth is the best part of the show. So, and probably our most embarrassing thing will be in the episode coming up.
Oh, man, yeah. Uh-oh.
So we won't even tell you what that is.
Oh, teaser.
Spoiler alert.
Nicely done.
Now they're going to find out their rate's going to go way up.
That's right. That's right.
I think for us, a lot gets cut out because since we can't visually see each other, we step on each other's lines a lot because we're all talking, but we can't see each other. So we'll find that all three of us say, well, what do you guys think? Oh, are we going now? Are we still recording? Let's start. Oh, is it? And then we'll do it all again. So we do that a lot. And every once in a while, Mark will put an Easter egg at the end of it that shows one of those blunders. But I think the best one we had is that Raw episode, which was done really, really well. The best thing about that Raw episode is Jim lost his track from the Raw episode. So we had four people recording that episode because we had a guest host, Alex Beauvais, join us. Jim's track was gone, deleted, gone. So what he did is Mark put together the three tracks that we had, sent it to Jim, and Jim faked for the entire hour and a half of that episode. He just faked and added in his own comments. Now, what's interesting is he could kind of hear what he said in the other track by listening to the background of the other feeds. But he's like, wait a sec. Yeah, I agree with that. No, that wasn't right. Yes, I agree with that. Because he had to make sure that his same comments filled the same amount of space. He said it took him like 3 hours to fill in that space.
Oh my gosh,
and I'm like, dude, you can't tell. If you listen to that episode, if anybody's listening to that Rod episode, there's no way you could tell without knowing. And he had to make everything after the fact. It was wonderful. And he did a great job.
That's unreal.
That happened to me with one of my interviews, too, where my track was gone. So I went back in, and my questions were much clearer, concise, and sounded really well done. I was really pleased with it when it came out. I said, maybe I should do that all the time. Then I wondered if they listened to it and say, you didn't ask me that. I mean, it just sounded like
Are you now, or have you ever been associated with the Communist Party? Yes, Tom, I love them.
The worst mistake I made was last year when I accidentally deleted my Origin show, because I recorded at like midnight, and then in editing deleted it, and that's really frustrating, because you just can't go back and do the same thing. And also, when we decided to read some other people's top 10 lists in the show, that was really bad. We'll never do that. Reading stuff in the show just doesn't work. Post it up and people can read it themselves.
My big mistake was assuming that people would want to spend money on a DVD to get stuff that they are already able to download for free.
You're right. Same thing.
I can't even count how many hours went into making new music and menus and all this stuff. And I think I bought 20 and I sold 14.
We sold 8.
You know, so I would say that's not a good spend of time. I guess you had similar experience.
Yeah, I mean, someone said it would be a good idea, and I put probably 20 hours into that, and it wasn't worth it.
Oh, let's see. I think my biggest mistake was the show I did on books, which was, I was just trying to get a show out quickly. I didn't have any time to do a lot of research. And I just thought, all right, I'll just grab some books off my shelf and do some reviews of three books. And my numbers went, they just dropped. after that. But that was a big, that was an important lesson, because it told me, all right, people don't want this. People want shows about games. They don't want shows about game books about games. So.
Any other questions out there from the audience? Yeah.
So do you guys foresee still doing this in 5-10 years?
I hope so.
It would be cool, I guess. I don't know if we'll be in the same area at that point. So if we would keep doing it, we'd probably have to do something like what Jason and Mark are doing. But
Sam's not looking at history. Look at the last person who left my show.
That's true.
I didn't Skype with them.
Yeah, that's true. see how we are. See how we are. Yeah, I know. I'm just the quick fix. So, but you know, who knows? I mean, not to be morbid, but I couldn't be around. I might not be around tomorrow. You know, so it's who knows.
A fact.
Yeah. I might not be around either.
It's hard to look at even a year at a time. I mean, it's an exhausting thing. I could see there would be a day where you just say, you know, I entertained with stopping at 100, but you know, I said, oh, we'll keep going for a while. But it's tiring.
I think for me, I would think that as long as we're doing them, I have to assume that we're doing them forever. You know, until we get to that point to where we know we're going to stop, because it's only successful because we think that we're going to keep doing it forever, and it's probably going to surprise us when it finally happens. We're like, oh, yeah, man, we're not doing it.
Well, it's because we're having fun doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's always our baseline. Is like, if this ever becomes work, where we just feel like, God, oh my God, we have to record another episode, that's the time to just stop. And,
yeah, if you don't have
something
passion,
else to do,
if
forget
you're
it.
Not inspired to do it. When you get there and you turn on that video camera and you're just like, I really don't want to talk about games anymore.
Yeah.
Then that is the time to stop.
Hang up the dice.
I'm trying to get more people involved in doing these sort of video tutorials on games because I'm starting to get burned out. Actually, it takes a lot of time and energy. So I'd rather put more of my energy towards helping other people get started who are energetic and excited than take a back seat and let some other people run with things for a while. So I don't see doing it in 5 to 10 years, but I do see helping other people who are excited about doing it on a bi-weekly basis, and then doing it only when I feel passionate about doing something. Because otherwise, you're bored, I'm bored, no one's having fun.
I've loved board games for 25-plus years, and I don't see that going away anytime soon. And I don't get sick of hearing myself speak. So I really need from the podcast standpoint, but time, energy, commitment, we've got families with new kids. It's really, really hard to keep on finding the time. The energy, I think, and the passion are still going to be there. I think time is going to be the limiting factor more so than the passion and interest, at least from my standpoint.
I love recording the show, and it's great just getting together and talking with you guys, but it's the editing that is the work. And
there's a reason they call it labor of love.
Yeah, if I could pass that off to somebody, I'd say I'll keep doing it as long as I have to. But and it's got to be a little easier when you're doing it with somebody else to kind of. I think that makes it a little more fun. You're getting together anyway, and whereas if you're by yourself, you're kind of.
Mark gets lonely.
I do get lonely.
He starts every episode with, oh, I need a frosty beverage.
Yeah. Be careful.
Any other questions? Oh, Mark, yes.
What's your feeling on different podcasts covering the same game, right? So I listen to 3 regularly, and if I hear detailed coverage about a game in one podcast, and then I see an episode coming up from another one on the same topic, do you expect... What are your thoughts about that? I don't
want
to try to
buy
it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love hearing what other people have to say. I love reading all the comments and reviews that people have on a game, whether or not I like it online, because it's always interesting to see other points of view. I think it's great.
Yeah, more the merrier. If you can get more perspectives on one game, bonus. You know, I mean, that's what you need to make your own educated decision. If you just listen to one person or 2 people's comments about something, you might have a grasp of what it is, but the more you get, the better it is, I think.
I think everyone has a different enough voice and perspective, too, that they are very, very different types of content that you're getting.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. The only time it was annoying was when Scott covered Fury of Dracula, and he took my joke. But I did it anyway.
I talking about me taking your joke. Yeah, screwing up the name of the podcast.
Doing it, yeah.
The furry of Dracula.
Speaking of, when it feels like work, what's work? I know about half of them, but I'm just curious. What is your job?
I'm a professor at Syracuse University in Library Information Science, and also the chair of the Library Science Department. So that new upgrade in title is why I plummeted in frequency of my show. But yeah.
And I'm a musician in a small professional theater in Indianapolis.
I'm a writer and a filmmaker, and I run a small not-for-profit in Indianapolis.
I'm a senior software engineer at a game company, Red Storm Entertainment, in Durham, North Carolina.
I'm a pastor in Korea and teach part-time.
I'm a full-time speech and basic computer skills teacher at high school.
I'm a software consultant, mostly Microsoft.
I'm an internet strategist and a freelance writer.
And designer.
And designer.
A sports book.
Yes. 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 Sports
book. Former employer.
Former employer of WizKids. Former interviewee of several companies.
So to wrap this up, let's have a final question toward the panel. And that is, we have some people out there who are podcasters or people that are thinking about it. Any gems of wisdom, any last pieces of advice you'd like to pass along? Well, I think we would all encourage more people to get into the podcasting hobby. The more people and the voices there are, the better it is all the way around. And so, any advice to help people?
I think that you have to define your show to make it different. There's a lot of podcasts that start up, and sometimes, I mean, I'll listen to it and I'll say, well, that's kind of, I mean, I like the new voice and everything, but I already get that from this podcast. I mean, I strive to make sure that our podcast is different than someone else. And if someone starts getting a little bit like us, I say, well, what can we do to be different? Because if there's two podcasts that are very similar, most people will listen to just one. You know, and you have the old games, and you guys go in depth, and well, no one's like Scott. And, you know, we have the variety show with the contributors and stuff, and I like the difference. And so when a new podcast comes, if it's really not that much different, I don't bother listening to it very much because, you know, it's just not different.
Ratio.
So having your niche of what you're going to do is interesting. And if someone comes on and says, I'm going to do a podcast about party games, I would say, hey, I'm going to listen to that because they're picking something that no one else is doing.
All right. I would also say once you find that niche, don't be afraid to be yourself because that's what's going to make the show.
Right.
You know, you'll find out after time because I think when Steve and I started, at least I kind of had an image of what I thought we should do that might not have been, you know, what we were, and as soon as we relaxed and we're just ourselves, the show just took off.
Yeah, in my particular experience, it goes along with what he just said. You got to keep it real. You got to be yourself. When I first started, I got a lot of comments. You know, I read all the comments about, oh, we miss Joe, we miss Joe, we miss Joe. And so I tried to act like Joe. And it just didn't work. You know, it just didn't work. So, If I don't agree with Tom, I'll say that. But if I agree with Tom, I'm going to say that. I'm just going to say what I think, not what I think you want to hear. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's important. You have to be honest with not only yourself, but you have to be honest with your audience as well.
Just don't be afraid. I mean, if you're interested in doing it, there's no real downside to just trying it. I mean, you're not going to... If it doesn't work out, or you know you're not happy with it, or you don't like it, you don't have to keep doing it. You don't have to release anything. Give it a try. You might like it. You know, and if generally if you make something and get it out there, there's going to be people that are going to listen to it. So definitely
worth it. And if you don't like what you're doing, you can always scrap it and start a new thing.
Yeah. So
consistency is also important. If you're sporadic, so will your audience. You know, a lot of people say they like it because we come out, well, we were coming out every week, and now we come out bi-weekly, and we do it. We get it done. If we have to record ahead of time so that it comes out on a regular basis, people like schedules. You know, I look forward to, you know, every time, you know, when I listen to Spiel, okay, I know it's coming out this weekend, so I'm going to download it and listen to it. And I like that. And if it wasn't there, then, all right, what else is there? And then I might not come back.
Yeah, I'm kind of different. I mean, I'm sure that most people are like that, but I'll have my aggregate of podcasts, and as they come in, I just download them and listen to them. And I think I sort of make assumptions that other people do the same thing, but I don't think that's the case. I think a lot more people are going directly to websites and knowing when the podcasts come out. But
my biggest tip is to have fun with it. If there have been a couple times where we've talked about, are we going to meet tonight? I'm like, nah, I'm just kind of burned. Let's do it tomorrow night instead. So sometimes I think if we're not really in it right there, you're better off waiting until you're re-energized to focus on it than not. And have fun with it. Be yourself. Be casual. I think one of the reasons a lot of the podcasts that are successful have become successful is because there's a sense of rapport, familiarity, and a comfort level between the podcasters that you feel like you're able to listen in on a group of friends that are talking about your favorite hobby, and it's exciting and engaging. I don't know if a podcast would be as engaging if it felt like a news report, if it felt a little bit stoic or staid, or just the camaraderie and the friendship that comes across, I really think conveys a lot more. Even if it's between you and a direct listener, if you're one person doing it and you don't have somebody else to work with, you can still make it very conversational, friendly, and engaging.
I think there's room for both, too, because there are some of the podcasts out there that are more news-like and more professional-sounding, and I enjoy those as well, just to get, you know, for the information. And I know, like, Pulp Gamer is a good example of that. You guys are just very professional. I mean, it's amazing what you guys do, and just the amount of information they give you about a game in a concise way. Same with Paul. It's just very concise. Everything's there, and it's if you want to learn about a game, that's the way to do it, too. So there's room for both of those.
I'm going to chime in with it. Don't be afraid to ask for help. We're all good at doing this.
Right. Yeah.
And it's really important to, you know, if you have favorite podcasters, contact them, find out what they do, because I have not met a stuck-up podcaster yet. Hmm. The truth to be told.
Tom, have you?
I'm so glad I come to these things.
And you will be excited when you finish your recording. You'll be so thrilled to hurry up and throw it online. It's because it's done. You've recorded it. Please listen to it yourself first.
Yes.
And listen to it on several, but, you know, just listen on the computer is one thing, but listen to it on your iPod, too, because you might pick up something else with a different speaker.
To even have someone else listen to it. But taking a few moments, taking the time to listen to it, editing out the ums, you'll get used to seeing what your looks like as a wave. Because you'll then you get to the point where you don't even have to listen to it anymore. You're like, that's an that's an that's an
There's got to be a way to do a find and replace of I spent so much time just, is that a cough, a laugh, an or
yep.
You got to listen to every little blip and make sure that.
We've been so picky sound-wise over the last few episodes that we've noticed everything in the house that's making a noise. It doesn't make a difference whether it's the refrigerator or any small appliance. You're like, what is that? Just, and we're running all over the house. Shut everything off.
Remember to plug the fridge back in when you're done. I guess there's my big mistake.
Or water pipe.
Right. Or if you turn the ringer off the phone, turn it back on when you're done.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, all right. I think we've reached the end of this silliness. I think, first off, we would like to thank you all for your support. So thank you for supporting us. And now, after this is done, I think we're actually, there's people asking if we pose for pictures. So we'll get together like a wedding if you want to take pictures. But with that, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of Origins, and we'll see you at the next event.